Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, I'm really happy today. We have a really great guest. She's Ann Chow. She's president of AT&T's National Business. She's here to talk about her company, what they do for small business, and how small business leaders can take advantage of some of the things that AT&T is doing. Ann, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Don. It's my pleasure. So happy to be here with all of you today.
And before we go any further, tell us a little bit about your background and the role you have at AT&T and what AT&T can do for a small business.
Absolutely. Thank you for this opportunity. So I have actually been at AT&T for over 27 years, and I've been in the industry for upwards of 30. I started many, many years ago in engineering, and that's actually what I went to school for, but I have spent over half of my career on the sales side and in customer service, serving business customers of all different sizes. The job that I currently have now is, as you so nicely pointed out, is president of National Business, and I am responsible for a team of over 12,000 business professionals who support more than 95% of all of AT&T's business customers. Included in that customer set are all of our small business customers, who are over 3 million small business customers all around the country that my team and I have the opportunity to serve. The scope of our responsibility is to serve these clients with the full portfolio of AT&T services, whether that be traditional networking or connectivity, mobile solutions, Internet of Things, or even DirecTV premium video services and solutions for our business customers. You know, I've had a wonderful career thus far. I would tell you, Don, that probably the greatest joys that I have in my day and really throughout the decades that I've been in the industry are the opportunity to serve customers of all sizes and in particular small businesses because of the role that technology has played over the past couple of decades. You know, one of the things that I like to say is that, this job, this environment, this industry, sometimes it's frustrating, but it is never boring. And more often times than not, it is extremely, extremely exciting.
Well, Ann, I'm going to ask one question and turn it over to Dan. But there's so much going on in the communications world today, and small businesses they have an awful lot of trouble keeping up with it. What are the three things that you will suggest that small businesses do as this world changes?
Yeah, for sure. Well, one is I absolutely believe that every small business, regardless of whether you're in the technology industry or not, has got to have a technology plan. Technology plays such a critical role in every organization for every consumer all around the world that small businesses would be remiss not to look at technology as not just an enabler, but a differentiator. So one is to absolutely be purposeful about having a technology plan. The second thing that I would suggest to all small businesses is that not to take technology for granted, particularly in the area of security. So there was once a time, decades ago, where security and the concerns about technology risks was a large business problem, and it was a large business challenge. Those days are long gone, and in fact, every business all around the world, all around the country, is a target and is vulnerable. And so I would encourage every small business to really be thinking about or partner with someone who helps you look at your environment in a very, very thoughtful way from a cybersecurity perspective. The third thing I would say is that, you know, this is actually one of the reasons why I love supporting small businesses, and I view it to be a great honor, actually, is that, you know, small businesses represent the heart of our economy and of this country. And small business owners, I find, unilaterally are extremely passionate about their business and want to focus on their business. As a result, you know, technology, the security around their technology or their solutions isn't their priority, nor should it be their area of expertise. So the third thing that I would say to every small business is to choose your partners and your vendors very, very wisely to ensure that, you know, one of the things, Don, that I say is a motto that I live by is that, you know, business is all about relationships. And especially for small businesses, whom you choose to partner with can make or break you. And so that would be the third thing that I would emphasize for every small business today.
Dan, it's all yours.
Thank you. Welcome to the show. And listening to your comments with great interest. Your company was the first company after the Congress passed the tax bill, actually I think even before the president signed the bill, announced a $1,000 bonus to 200,000 employees of AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
And since that announcement, 81 and probably more than that now, 81 other companies have stepped up to the plate in sharing revenue with their employees. What do you think that that's going to do, not so much the $1,000 that you're going to give to your employees, but what do you think the impact is going to be on business in general, and what are you planning for as a result of the new tax bill?
Yeah, so I'm not going to speak you know, very specifically about AT&T per se, and thank you for acknowledging, you know, the commitment that our leadership demonstrated to our employee base and to the market in terms of that bonus for our employees. I think overall, in terms of what, you know, what we would foresee, which I think is, you know, excellent for businesses of all sizes, is investment, right? Small businesses, in, you know, in some of the studies that we've done, 17% of small business owners think that it's a good time to expand their spending in the upcoming 3 months, right? And we also know that small businesses today provide nearly 58 million jobs in the U.S. and represent nearly 48% of the U.S. workforce. So we know that they are a fuel for growth, right? And our perspective certainly is that, you know, we want to be there as our customers choose to invest. You know, we believe wholeheartedly that technology, security, data analytics, you know, that customer service, customer relationships, partnerships out in the marketplace are critical for every business to be successful. And what we do from an AT&T standpoint is, you know, we very much are very purposeful and very thoughtful in how we choose to invest not only in our assets and our portfolio, whether it be our fiber footprint as an example, whether it be in our cybersecurity capabilities or our Internet of Things portfolio and partnerships, but also an investment in our people. One of the areas that, and I think that, you know, the decision around the bonus is just one example of that, where for us, we know that our employees are the heart of our company, and we are a services organization, and ours is to serve our clients. So we invest very, very heavily in our employees, in their development, in their knowledge, in their capabilities, because at the end of the day, their role is to serve our customers. And in the case of my organization, of course, to serve our small business customers to the best of our ability. So we really believe that it's all about innovation, Dan, innovation,
sure,
and investment and growth, right? I mean, I think that that is really the key thing that businesses of all sizes, but in particular small businesses, are after, right? We're after growth, right? And, you know, what I say to my team is that that growth is, you know, growth for our customers first and foremost. It's growth for our business, but also growth for ourselves personally and professionally if we found you know, a profession that we're passionate about.
Yeah, I'm curious about the long-term, somewhat long-term planning process. not only as it relates to small business, but more specifically as it relates to you and your staff at AT&T.
Sure.
One could look back 12 months ago, and if you followed most of the pundits, couldn't believe that Mr. Trump was going to be elected president, and you couldn't have anticipated that there was going to be a tax bill of the magnitude that it was, and the other changes were taking place, and that businesses were formation, and employment was going to continue to rise. And so did this whole last 12 months, and I'm not trying to be critical, I'm just trying to get you make plans. And when I worked at Merrill Lynch, we did 1-year tactical plans and 5-year strategic plans every year. In your tactical planning, did you look at 12 months ago and say that the kind of events that took place in the last 12 months were going to take place?
Yeah, sure. So let me speak to that from my perspective. And again, just to reiterate the role that I have a responsibility for a unit called National Business that spans small and medium-sized business all around the country, as well as being responsible for certain airlines of business that we have, like DirecTV for Business, as well as serving all of our customers from a mobility perspective. Okay, but I've been, you know, in the company for many decades and been around the industry, so I'll speak more generically around the planning process, and then also talk to you a little bit about what we've seen and kind of my experience over the last 12 months, let's say. Right. So first of all, you know, I think one of the things that we, you know, that I have seen done and also been part of, whether it be from a sales role or a marketing role, you know, or a strategy or even planning role, is the importance of that strategic planning, as you say, right, long-term planning. I think one of the things that is really so interesting that is directly impacting small businesses is the fact that, you know, back in the day when I started my career back in 1990, in the early 90s, long-term planning was a 5-10-year horizon. Do you remember that, Dan and Don, right? Five
sure.
or 10 years is when you would say, okay, let's do some long-term planning. Well, what has happened that has been enabled by, and again, this is Anne's perspective, that has been enabled by the rapidly changing pace of technology, largely the advent of the internet, as well as the as mobile broadband all over the world, is that innovation cycle has compressed significantly. And so now when we think about long-term planning, yes, of course, we, like many organizations, will do a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan, you know. But as you talk about 10 years, even as you talk about a year out, right, you've got to be agile. In fact, one of the biggest cultural transformations that we have been undergoing is really to focus on our agility, our flexibility, and our speed to market for this exact reason, is that change is the only constant. I know that's really, really cliche, but it is so incredibly true, and I see it in my customers every single day, is that you cannot entirely predict what's going to happen, right? You're not going to be able to predict when something is going to take off. I mean, if you remember back in 2007, right, which was the advent of the iPhone and the smartphone, right? Who would have thought that was just over a decade ago? You think about tablets, right? I mean, when I was growing up, what was a tablet? A tablet was a pill that you popped in your mouth, right? Now when you think about a tablet, what is that, right? One of the ones that I like to say is, you know, think about Google, or how we use the word Google. When I was growing up, Google was one of those little arts and crafts eyes that you stuck on your arts projects, right? So the way that we plan is through a lot of scenario building. We are incredibly diligent around those things which we feel that we can control internally versus those things which we think we cannot, we clearly cannot. And, you know, whether that be, the social environment around us, the regulatory environment, the political environment, the economic environment, right? And so that's where you develop scenarios and different action plans depending on how those outcomes tend to take place. And so we are doing that constantly because we know that we have a huge responsibility to serve our customer base, and our customers come to us largely because we are known for, I mean, heavens, we've been in business now for, over 140 years, right? But we are a company that is constantly changing. You know, we're a technology company. Our customers also come to us because they seek innovation, right? And they expect us to stay ahead of the game. And in order for us to stay ahead of the game, we've always got to be anticipating the different kinds of changes that might be out there happening, and be prepared, right? Be as prepared as we possibly can. And so that would be kind of my comments to you around how we think about planning, how we've approached it. And quite frankly, we're constantly trying to stay ahead of it and just work, work on our agility, which I think brings us back actually to this whole notion of security and how security has evolved in the eyes of what is important to a small business.
Dan's tip of the day should resonate with every small business. Having a bright, clear, physical plan always adds profits. One recent survey revealed 71% of walkers responded that they would enter a newly refurbished establishment even if they didn't have anything to buy or were in market for buy. So how important is it a small business for physical establishments where customers come in to buy? It's very important. Sprucing up a small business makes sense. Saving cents may cost a small business dollars if the right quality paint is not used. According to Hotel Association figures, the average time between major spruce-ups for hotels, for member hotels, dropped from 8 to 7 years in the past 12 months. Why? Because new establishments are very important. But don't think these statistics apply only to brick-and-mortar stores. The entry page for any business is that company's storefront. For those online leaders who think they are immune to the need for change to their storefronts, think again. While changing index pages initially loses visitors, new visitors are usually generated within 3 months. So today's message, in a physical plant or online, stay new. It will help profits.
You talked about the ability to be flexible and adaptable, and the rate of change, especially as it relates to technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I would think that the rate of change in the political environment and the government in Washington D.C. and what it's tried to do and what it's trying to do in terms of regulations and to stimulate the economy, that's got to be a major challenge for everybody trying to serve business, whether it be large or small, because it came so quickly and so unexpected. What I'm curious is what are your clients, and we're in the small business, we're not in big business, but in small business, what are you hearing from your customers? What are they looking for from you today? Their concerns about what's going on?
Yeah, sure, of course. Well, I'm pleased to say that what we hear from our customers, we feel very amply prepared to help them address. My small business customers, they are very much focused on how to grow, how to differentiate themselves in this kind of environment, how to put in place solutions and services that they don't have to worry about so that they can focus on their business. As both of you guys are small business experts, you know that, and this is one of the reasons why I love serving them, is that small business owners, right, are largely entrepreneurs. They have gone into business not because they have to, but because they want to, right? And so passion is something that lives in the heart of every small business owner. With that, what I hear from my customers is that they want to not worry about all of the noise around them, and sometimes they can view that noise to be, political in nature or technological in nature, but they really want to not worry about anything except what helps their business grow. What I would say is that security is becoming a burgeoning issue for small businesses. In one of the studies that we did recently that we were citing from Iconoculture, security solution adoption is actually very limited in small businesses. And Dan and Don, this is something that I actually this keeps me up at night. What their stats show us is that only 17% of small businesses use antivirus software. 16% use firewalls, and 10 use data encryption, and 6 use outsourced security. So that is a vast minority of small businesses. That is of such a great concern because we all know, right? We've seen it. I mean, it hits the press every day in terms of the breaches, the hacks. This whole notion of how do you keep your business secure is very, very different today than it was even just 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Let me elaborate on that a little bit. And I liken this to if we think about a business that has a storefront, right, that is brick and mortar. You know, you think in the kind of old days, well, if I protected my store with a great security system and locks and gates, I can prevent somebody from coming in, right? Think of that as the perimeter. I would tell you that we still run into many small businesses who still think about the perimeter that way as a fixed thing, right? Like, hey, I'm going to put in place this network solution or enable my employees with these mobile services, and I have a hardened perimeter that as long as I protect them, it's okay, right? Where the world is now and where technology is now is that perimeter is actually constantly in flux. And I think one of the most significant mistakes that small businesses make is that they have not done a true risk analysis on their business around cybersecurity, whether it's risks from the employees that they've got, whether it's people out in the field, whether it's risk in how they're storing their data or intellectual property, how they're using content, risks as it relates to how they're interacting or interfacing with their partners or even their customers. We really work with small businesses to ensure that we are talking to them about their perimeter in a very, very different way. And I think very, very importantly, we emphasize with every small business is that, you know, nothing is foolproof, okay? You know, no defense is impenetrable. And so one of the things that we work on with small businesses is also what do you do if you're breached or if you're hacked? Do you have processes and procedures in place that whether they're backup or otherwise that enable your business not to come crashing down around you? In fact, there was a survey done just recently where it showed that 62% of all businesses said that they were breached in 2015. So when you think about that, and you think about the number of businesses that there are in the country and how many of them are small businesses, we already know that small businesses are being breached. The question is, do they know about it, right? And how is that going to impact the health of their business and the growth of their business? And do they even see it coming? That is very much what we're hearing from small business customers. One of the other things that I'll share with you that, and this actually touches on one of my 3 points that I made at the upfront of this discussion, is that small businesses are just constantly looking for the right relationships and the right partnerships. I'm working a couple of really serious service situations right now. I won't go into details because I'm not at liberty to do so, but I can tell you that these servicing issues are severely impacting these small businesses in the Midwest. We have triaged all around our support for these customers. I've got a couple of CEOs of small businesses that are reaching out to me, and it is not an AT&T issue, I would say, but we are there for these customers because we know that they do not have the technical expertise. They chose us as a partner for some portion of their solution. They're coming to us for help, and that is what we do. We serve our customers, and we're not going to walk away, from them if they need help, right? And so, small businesses I find now are not just about, hey, let me get this solution or let me get this capability and infuse it into my business. They very much are looking for partners, vendors, suppliers whom they can count on, right, after the services, the products, or the support are in. Any questions or comments or thoughts about that?
Yeah, I wanted to, because we don't have a lot of time left, and I wanted to raise one more question, and it's a psychological question. I understand what you're saying about security in small business, but if you're the president of some kind of a widget manufacturing company, you got 50 or 60 employees, and you see the magnitude of the breaches of some of the biggest companies in the world. How in the world? I can see where a small businessman is going to say, you know, I could spend a lot of money, but if these guys can't stop it, how in the world can I ever afford to try and stop it on my own?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a great question, Dan. And you know, in actuality, I actually think that psyche is, first of all, it's real, right? So we see it with our small business owners and our small business customers. But I see a more bias towards action. I'll give you an actual example of a small business customer. Again, I'm not at liberty to share the name, but it's ironically it's a similar to your rhetorical example there. So we had a customer in the Midwest who is a small manufacturing firm. Their director of IT was asked by upper management to just give a report, right? Give a report on, so what's the state of our security situation, okay? They had a relationship with a solution provider who, you know, had provided them with their services, their network services, for many, many years. So this is a small trusted advisor that they have. This solution provider actually happened to be part of AT&T's channel program, right? And this is one of the reasons why we have building and growing relationships with many, actually small businesses who are in the technology industry, right? Because there are numerous solution providers out there who have deep expertise and who have very much many of those localized relationships. This solution provider came to us because they knew they were experts in network but not experts in security. And we worked together to serve this customer on assessing their environment and also providing them with services that were not hugely expensive, but would help give them various lines of defense, whether it's through firewalls or denial of service, distributed denial of service capabilities. We've made significant investments, and there are many different things that are out there, depending on the nature of your business and your business model, that customers can look into. So I actually find that small businesses, they may be reticent to go to a really big provider, but the great news is there's many other fellow small businesses out there who provide solutions to them that are in the technology industry who can actually still then also benefit from capabilities from AT&T as well as a direct relationship with AT&T. So I actually think it's the reverse, right? I mean, I think small businesses will see, well, you know, I'm in business, and it's actually another psyche dynamic, isn't it, Dan, where small businesses are out there in business because they believe they offer something fundamentally different than a big business, right? I mean, whether it's your local hardware store, your local proverbial bookstore, which I always, go to, or your local boutique, right? Of course it's going to be cheaper if you go to one of the big, big brand places, but they're offering something different. And I do think that when we capture that whole entrepreneurial innovation, right, differentiation spirit that resides within every small business, we've got something to offer, and more often than not, we're able to compel that customer into action because, of course, we just want for them to be successful. We just want for them to grow. That is our, that is our number one objective, is to serve and satisfy and support our customers. So I think that psyche can actually work to their advantage, right? Well, because I do think that there's something to be said for some of these big companies, and I have been in big business for a big part of my career as well. There is some complacency that goes on, right? And there's also some bureaucracy that goes on, right? Small businesses have the advantage of sometimes being more focused and being more agile, right? And we've got to be there for them.
Right. I'm going to throw it back to Don.
Okay, great.
And so, president of AT&T National Business, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been illuminating. I've been sitting here listening and having a great time learning so much. If people wanted to reach you or your company, or how best to do it?
Yeah, I'm actually on LinkedIn if they wanted to reach out that way, or that you can also reach us through through our att.com website. But I'm definitely out there, and if there are any small businesses out there that would love to strike up a conversation, I'd be happy to connect with you guys. And Don and Dan, thank you so much for the opportunity to spend some time with you here today.
And spell your name for them and your LinkedIn.
Yeah,
please.
Sure. My name is Anne, Anne. The last name is Chow, Chow.
Okay.
I also blog a couple of times, blog monthly, a couple times a month, so out on LinkedIn, and so would love to be connected out there and see what we can do and get some feedback from those of you guys out there who are our customers. Thank you for your business. Those of you who are not and would love to talk to AT&T, I would love an opportunity to spend some time with you.
Spoken like a true salesperson. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
The new book, Recalculating, 97 Plus Experts on Driving Small Business Growth.
Marcus Lemonis, J.D. Powers, and John Scully, and 100 other presidents and experts contributed to Recalculating the book. Why did all these people agree to contribute to the book? I'm Don Mazzella, and I'm the editorial director of Small Business Digest. And for 20 years, we have been offering small business leaders information and data to increase profits. Recalculating the book was named the best small business book by the panel at the Independent Press Association. Whether you need help with marketing, staffing, finance, operations, technology, or many other subjects, they're all here in Recalculating the book. They're now available at Amazon at a reduced cost. We've also created the radio program, Recalculating, which is available on recalculating.biz.
The new book, Recalculating, 97 Plus Experts on Driving Small Business Growth.
Dan Perkins here from recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Should I grow my business or stay the size that I am? One of the most difficult decisions about a small business is, should I try to grow it? And if I want to grow, what is the best way to do it? If you look at the internet, you can find lots of advice on how to expand your business. So here's your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. Go to the sba.gov website and you'll find 10 ideas of how to grow your business. They're not in order of importance, they're just 10 ideas. Some may be more suitable, others may not, for you and your business. The one that struck me was add another store. My brother-in-law started with one pizza shop, and over the last 15 years, he's grown to 5. You may not have a storefront, but a service business. So look at your competitors and see if they might be willing to sell or merge with you. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. It's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Dan, we really have a very interesting guest. They say you always have to be especially careful when you talk with someone, a professional from Philadelphia. But David Bookbinder has a really terrific reputation. We have asked him on this program to talk about his specialty. David Bookbinder, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
David, tell us a little bit about your background, what you do.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a valuation consultant, and what that means is I help companies figure out what their most important assets are worth. Myself and my team, we help businesses of all sizes, public and private, in all geographies and all industries, in figuring out what their business is worth, what their intellectual property is worth.
Well, starting there, currently I'm involved with an acquisition of a nonprofit. I can't go into details, but one of the things I sit on the board, and I asked them months ago to get an evaluation of the company, and the board said, "Well, we don't need one. We're being acquired." And my question back to them was, "Well, how do you know what to ask for if you don't know your own valuation? How does one go about evaluating a company. Let's say we just had an example of a 75 company person company in the widget industry.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, to your point, a lot of folks are reluctant, hesitant to really engage in evaluation process. And what usually happens is it winds up biting them in the rear end for a variety of reasons at the worst possible time. So to answer your question about how you go about doing it, I'd say two of the more popular methodologies are income-based and market-based approaches, and I'll just summarize them this way without getting into, you know, valuation technical wonk speak. If you've ever bought or sold a home, then you generally understand what a market approach is, right? So if you're looking at buying a house, for example, in a particular neighborhood, you look at recent comps. What have other houses sold for in this market? And then you start to make some adjustments, perhaps, for their geography, location to, say, shopping and entertainment, proximity to your in-laws, which could be a plus or a minus, depending on your perspective. And then you can go from there. The same thing is true in the valuation of a business, where we'll look at recent transactions of companies of similar size and industry and derive valuation multiples to apply to our particular subject company. Another way to think about valuation is it's a forward-looking exercise. So it really almost doesn't matter as much as what the company has done in the past as what it's expected to do in the future. So the value of a business is a function of the present value of its future benefits, and that's an income-based approach. So that's kind of a high-level overview of some of the valuation methodologies we might think about.
Well, before I turn it over to Dan, I'd like to explore that further, because all of the potential – the value is in the potential rather than in the past. But how do if the past is terrible, how do you predict the future?
Yeah, well, I've got a crystal ball and I have a new set of batteries for it. The problem is it's probably not much better than your crystal ball. Here's the reality, and what you're describing is what I would call the hockey stick forecast. Where you've got a company perhaps where history has been either flat, declining, what have you, and then now we're talking about putting a value in the business, and suddenly the future is all bright and optimistic, and the forecast literally looks like that hockey stick where you go from the blade all the way up to the shaft where it's just a trajectory northward. So when we get forecasts that look like that, first of all, we have to come at it with a skeptical eye. If you haven't done it before, why would we expect that you're going to be able to do it now? So we spend a lot of time really drilling into understanding what's driving that would-be forecast. A lot of times it's just unbridled optimism with not a whole lot of rigor behind it. And in those circumstances, if clients aren't able to adjust or think about adjusting their future forecast, one of the things that we have in our toolbox, so to speak, is to make an adjustment for our assessment of risk. So when I describe the idea that the value of a business is the present value of future benefits, that present value is determined by an appropriate risk rate. So the greater the risk in execution on the forecast, the lower the value.
I'm going to turn it over to Dan now.
Thank you. Dave, I've got a... not a similar situation to Don, but I am working on something I would consider to be quite unique. I have a client who has received patents and has proof of concept of his patent in a commercial operation. And they have no sales. So their hockey stick is clearly, as you pointed out, bumping along the bottom of the blade with no sales. However, if we're successful in communicating to the world, and I mean to the world, the benefit of this process, which is controlled by patents, it is not beyond the realm of possibility that this technology could be used in every corner of the world. And scientists have looked at the technology. And so I have the job of building the marketing plan of how we're going to license this technology as opposed to building factories to build the equipment. And so here we have a situation where we have research and development. We have a patent that's been granted, and then we've had a proof of concept in a industrial application doing exactly what we said it was going to do. And now we're now looking at the next stage of trying to figure out how to value the future value of the business in order to attract institutional investors today. So is that a unique pricing mechanism?
A unique pricing challenge? No, not at all. Well, it's a challenge for sure. Is it unique? No. So throughout my career, I've worked with a number of early stage life sciences and technology companies. So to stick with the hockey stick analogy, to your point, if they haven't done it yet, there's no history from which to even begin to think about. It's all what does the future look like. So when you think about a life sciences company where they're going through their proof of concept in going through their testing and so forth and validating the efficacy of drugs and whatnot, you literally can have circumstances where a company goes from zero sales and heavy losses for, say, 5 years, and then suddenly overnight they need to hire 100 salespeople because they've gotten FDA approval, and now it's a billion-dollar business. So the mechanics of the valuation exercise at this point where your client is essentially the same. You're going to need to construct a forecast. You may need to do several different scenarios. Depending on the facts and circumstances, it could require the rigors of, say, a Monte Carlo simulation to model out multiple scenarios. But essentially, it's trying to build a picture of what the future might look like, probability weight what those scenarios and outcomes might look like, and again, bringing those future benefits back at an appropriate discount rate or risk rate, if you will. If you're talking about life sciences and tech businesses, the good news is a lot of other companies have done similar things before, so there are benchmarks that you can refer to. To a large degree, you are inventing your own wheel, though.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the challenges that there is an investment firm out of London who is very much interested in the technology from the standpoint of what it could do for mankind, and is seriously considering putting in a significant amount of money. The problem that having them make the deposit is that under traditional valuation models, if you've got somebody who's going to put in $1 million and he's going to buy 10% of the company, then the other 90% is worth something greater than that, so that the whole value of the company is ratcheted up by the fact that that one investor is putting in X amount of dollars. And I think that that's a conventional model, because it says if somebody's willing to pay you $1 million for 10% of the company, then the other 90% has got to be worth something more than $1 million. And so everybody just says, okay, it's worth $9 million. And I'm not sure that is an appropriate model, but it seems to be what a lot of people want to use in trying to figure out what the value of the company is. And I'm not comfortable with that, but I'm not uncomfortable, and I'm curious as to your thoughts about it.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. So if you've got a willing buyer or an investor and it's an arm's length transaction, the terms of the deal generally do set an indication of value. Here's the flip side, though. I've seen this so many times throughout my career, though. It is about the facts and circumstances. So if you've got a circumstance where a company is in need of capital to achieve their next milestone, and they've been having a difficult time raising that capital, you know, it's a negotiation. So you need to do what you need to do, but just recognize that transaction, as you pointed out, will probably set a benchmark for anybody else who's thinking about coming into it at that particular point in time. You know, if you can finesse the story, so to speak, you've got an opportunity to maybe make your case. But if you were retaining a valuation professional, you know, when you look at a real deal and it's done at an arm's length, it does really set the tone.
Dan Perkins here for Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your veterans tip of the day. Did you know that the suicide rate for women vets is 12 times that of their sisters in civilian life? Did you know that 1 in 4 women vets feel uncomfortable
about talking to people about their mental health issues? Did you know almost 600,000 women vets in America are suffering from PTSD? It's time to help. It's time for all of us to encourage our sisters, mothers, and wives to get help by contacting their local VA hospital, clinic, or community-based health care center. So if you know a woman vet that is suffering, go to va.gov and find their nearest VA facility. This has been Dan Perkins of Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that you said earlier in your discussion with Don, because it reminded me of a conversation that I had with a realtor. And she's a very successful realtor. I live on Sanibel Island in the Gulf of Mexico and Southwest Florida. And she's a very successful real estate broker because she said that when she started out, people who want to sell their homes have an unrealistic expectation of value of what they want to sell their house for. And so what she does is that before she signs an agreement with the seller, she has the seller get an appraisal done on the value of the property. And then if anybody wants to question the asking price for the property, they deliver an independent appraisal of what that appraiser thinks the property is worth. Is that a good idea?
Boy, well, if somebody's thinking of selling a business, it's really a function of where they are in the process. And I emphasize the word process. If it's a planned sale, and you have an opportunity, we have an opportunity to spend some time, you know, year two, three, et cetera, in preparing for this. We can perform valuation exercises and help a seller understand how to maximize their value. If it's an emergency type situation, there's an issue with a family, for example, an unplanned, unforeseen event, that dynamic changes. And what I'll often do is I'll recommend that they get an intermediary like your real estate broker, for example, but a business broker or middle market investment banker. And to your point, they will do a valuation. And in my investment banking days, we would do a valuation of the business before we would bring it to market to set expectations because you're right. The same way with folks who are selling their home generally tend to think their homes are worth more than they are. Business owners generally tend to think the business is worth more than it really is, too.
Right. So who are your customers right now? Who are your clients?
My clients vary. Like I said, I support companies of all sizes, public companies, private companies, in a variety of industries. And if I looked at my active engagement sheet, that would actually indicate exactly that. They're all over the country. I've got one that's located in France, and we're helping them with a number of different strategic imperatives.
So your base is Philadelphia, as I understand.
Yeah, I'm a Philly guy, born and raised here, went to school here. I didn't throw snowballs at Santa Claus, though.
Okay, good. I don't think we got – do you have a website?
Yeah, EisnerAmper.com.
Can you spell that for us, please?
Yeah, EisnerAmper. It's one word, EisnerAmper.com.
And is that the two partners?
No, it's two firms, actually.
Oh, I see. Okay. And how long have you been in business?
Oh, the firm's been around for a long time. I've been with EisnerAmper only for about the last 10 months or so.
Okay. And what were you doing before that?
Before I joined the firm, I launched and led an East Coast valuation practice for a Midwest-based consulting firm. So I launched them here in Philadelphia.
Mm. So who would be – we have an audience of several hundred thousand people a week, primarily small businessmen, entrepreneurs. Who in that space, is there a need for your service in the small business market?
Yeah, there is. What I found is that there's always a need for conversation and mind share, and I'm always happy to talk to people. I don't care if it leads to business or not. I'm happy to have conversation because, as I've said many times, while I love working with our publicly traded clients, a lot of times they just view evaluation exercise as nothing more than compliance. You know, throw it in the drawer and we'll use it if we need it. But
Right.
Well, never life and death when you talk about a privately held business. Valuation is probably as close to life and death as you can get. And a lot of them, the business owners, just don't know what they don't know in terms of what creates value, what enhances value. How do investors and buyers look at your business when you're thinking about selling or raising capital? So there's a lot of mind share that we can provide, and we're happy to do it.
Super. And do people mostly get to you through their website, or do you have agents across the country? How do you find potential customers?
Well, the interesting thing is that people tend to find me. I spend a lot of time in the market talking about what I do and who I serve and who the firm helps and so forth. But I recently published a book last fall, and that has gotten I'll call it notoriety and some visibility. And I'm finding that people are reaching out to me not only because of my reputation in the market in valuation services, but as a result of the interest in the book.
And what is the title of the book, and where can they get it?
Yeah, so the book is called The New ROI, Return on Individuals. It's available in hard copy and for download at Amazon as I talk to you right now. And I imagine in the next 2 weeks or so, it'll be available for download at iTunes and Nook.
Terrific. Don, back to you.
Oh, I have a lot of questions, but I guess you brought up a point earlier that people tend to think, value their companies higher than other people. What are some of the rules that you'd ask them to, or not rules so much as things to think about before they come to see you about their company?
Boy, that's a good question. And if only it were that simple, where people actually were doing all the appropriate planning, right? Doesn't always happen. They don't always get the best advice. But here's one way to quickly think about it. A lot of privately held businesses, especially the smaller ones, are managed day to day with the strategic imperative of avoiding paying taxes. So you can figure out what that means. But let's pretend you've got an income statement that shows that you've got zero income. So now you want to go sell that particular business, and now you want to try and make the case that it's worth millions of dollars. But a prospective buyer is going to look at those financial statements and say, hey, you haven't been making any money. You can't have it both ways. So that's part of the planning process that we talk about. Like I said, if we have time to work with clients before they're thinking about selling, we can educate them on things like that and get their financial statements in order so that when they are actually in the process of selling, they're focused on demonstrating the value as opposed to trying to rationalize and explain away historic performance.
That's a darn good point. You know, I heard that once before by someone else, and you're absolutely right. But and I'm thinking back of the companies I've been involved with, and you're absolutely right, not paying taxes. But could you give us some examples of some of the things you can do to demonstrate your value while at the same time helping to avoid the taxes?
Yeah, so if any of the audience watches Shark Tank, you probably have seen it many times on that show. Understand your numbers. That's kind of a big deal, understanding your numbers. And understanding what the future really holds. So when you start to talk about that future benefit stream and trying to entice a buyer or an investor as to the value of your business over the long term, it's got to be a well-reasoned explanation of the future. And I offer you and your listeners this. I've written two pieces. They're on my LinkedIn profile, and they're also at my HuffPost page, business page. One of them is called, What is My Business Worth? And that's the most frequent question that I'm asked, what's my business worth, valuation guy? And I go at a high level and try and explain some of the things to think about in terms of valuing a business. And another one that's had a whole lot of resonance is a piece that's called Thinking About Selling Your Company. Here are five things you need and one that you don't. And spoiler alert, the one that you don't is actually a valuation.
Well, you know, we're... over time, can you share with us some stories where you helped a company demonstrate their value?
Yeah, well, in my investment banking days, I can tell you that we were bringing a company to market, and we valued them all the appropriate methodologies at around $10 million. And then when we brought them to market, we actually sold at around $15 million. And the lesson there was that valuation metrics are great, and they're super helpful and insightful in thinking and planning and so forth. But when you're talking about selling a business or selling your home, the rubber meets the road when you're in the transaction. And I actually talk about that in the context of this piece I just alluded to about thinking of selling your company.
I guess both Dan and I have been involved with companies and seen it. In today's world, do you think it's a buyer's market or a seller's market in middle market?
Yeah, I got to tell you that I think that's really a facts and circumstances and company by company thing. I'd really hate to generalize on something like that and set any false expectations. It really is specific to a company and where they are and what they're up to and what the future looks like.
So your website again?
EisnerAmper.com. And if anybody would like to get a hold of me, you can find me at Eisner Amper's website. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, Dave Bookbinder.
You know, I seldom dealt with a more poised guest. You're really terrific at this.
Thanks so much. I'm really passionate about what I do. I'm passionate about helping companies with the valuation exercise, and I'm really passionate about what the message and the underpinnings of the book. So happy to do it, and I thank you guys for having me on.
No, thank you. I know I learned a lot. I hope you did too, Dan.
I did. I just like to, if I got a couple of minutes, I want to ask one more question. Not so much about evaluations as... we're seeing a significant uptick in economic activity. And do you think evaluations are going to go up, or are they going to pretty much stay where they are for businesses
well, again,
that might want to be sold?
Yeah, again, it really is a function of the type of business and the particular company. It really is facts and circumstances. And please understand, I'm not trying to dodge your question. It truly is a function of a particular business and what their particular opportunity looks like. I can tell you we've done work with two companies in the infotech space. They each have different trajectories. And you know, the market will tell you that multiples may look like X, but you're applying X to two different sets of numbers. So that's the real challenge.
All right. Thank you for your time and your terrific insight.
My pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me on. Happy to do it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Small business funding is easier these days thanks to a new breed of lender called FinTech lenders. These internet-based lenders cut the time between applying for funds and getting the funds to just hours instead of months. They also make it easier to repay your loans, but their costs might be a little higher for their service. The next time you need dollars for your small business, try them. You might like to change. I'm Dan Perkins for Recalculating.biz and your small business tip of the day.
Also remember, our shows are all archived at Recalculating.biz. If you missed some portion of this interview and want to hear more of the guests who have been on our show, go to Recalculating.biz. Goodbye, Dan. And to our audience, have a good week.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.